He scopes out the present, shakes out the past, and keeps an eye out on the future. This is the Racing with Bruno podcast.
Today, we're going to talk about biases. Biases that we hear about all the time on Twitter or X, whatever the heck you call it now, on trackside, tracking trips tracking, whatever that is, on Naira, golden rails, dead rails, all that stuff. We're going to kind of enlighten you a little bit about how to really navigate the bias ocean out there that we have. And I'm going to do it with my favorite Chicho, my good buddy, Brian Lazarica. Hey, Brian, how's it going out there in California?
Hey, Bruno, it's going good. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate the time we're going to have to discuss this topic.
You and I go back to handicapping for years, back in the early 2000s when you were with TVG. If you had to count, if you had a penny every time you heard the word bias, golden rail, dead rail, would you be rich right now?
You know, I think it's always been there and it's always been discussed. I think it's more recently, I don't know, maybe it's because there's obviously more of a social media presence. Everybody has, their own voice now and that they put their opinions out there. But it's definitely become more out in the forefront now than it was, back then. Well, obviously TVG days, even prior to that, well before when I first started going to, Santa Anita and California tracks out here in the 80s. But yeah, it's definitely become more, and it's become more scrutinized, both ways, either you're pro bias or you're anti bias, or you don't really believe in it. But it's definitely been talked about a lot more, good and bad.
And just to clarify, I'm racing with Bruno with Brian Lazarica, and we're talking biases. You have to go back to Steve Davidowitz's Betting Thoroughbreds book that was published in 1977. And Steve wrote a whole section about bias of the racing surface. And talked about how you can take advantage of races where you can identify speed being king, identify speed being not good on a particular day. Brian, I think, and all respect to my former mentor and friend, the late Steve Davidowitz, the way that he envisioned biases and how you try to identify and use nowadays, I think it's absolutely rubbish. The way people are, one or two races where the first two races of the day, the winner goes wire to wire, and you got people popping up and saying speed bias, golden rail.
Yeah, I mean,
I think a lot of this is bullshit.
To your point, I think people tend to say it could be a bias sooner rather than later. I mean, the kind of quicker then maybe sometimes it should. I think more of a sample size, should be taken. But to go and dismiss biases altogether, I mean, I think that's a, not saying that that's what you're saying, but I'm saying that for people to go out and say that biases don't exist is just naive, because they do. But to what extent is what, horse players wade through on a daily basis, obviously if there is one and they do exist, obviously the faster that you can identify a true bias, the better that you can capitalize on something like that. I mean, we go back to, racing surfaces, not even just track surfaces, because I believe that they do exist. And I believe that the biggest biases that I've seen are weather related. But I think you can go back to tracks and stuff and before, Keeneland, went to synthetic and then they went back to dirt. I remember speed always being the inside speed at Keeneland. It was just a notorious, you know, the way that the track favored speed. That's the same with old Santa Anita. Santa Anita's gotten a little bit different, but California has always been, you know, speed favoring. Now, those are just track, you know, preferences, not really biases, but those are things that have existed for a long time. And, you know, Steve touched on that. Obviously, like you said, in the 70s, I don't remember exactly which book it was, but I know Andy Beyer also touched on it. I remember reading, I think it might have been Beyer on Speed or one of the books that Andy had put out also. He had mentioned biases a while ago. But, yeah, they definitely do exist. To what extent, you know, we go through that on a daily basis.
To understand a factor in handicapping, you either have to understand the history and you have to understand the mechanics or dynamics of it. And with biases, a lot of people that call out biases don't understand if there's been any changes to the track. They don't, and a lot of the times they have zero idea of what that track plays like. You mentioned back to Keeneland in the early 2000s. It seemed like the inside was king. The inside speed would always beat the outside horse. That's not a bias. That is a main track profile. And I think people really get those two mixed up. For example, at Fairgrounds, I don't look at the track being speed biased. I look at the track being profile to horses on the inside post with speed. So if that's something that the track plays to, what you want to look at are those days where all of a sudden the 4 or 5 wide moves are the ones that are winning the races. And you get a number of those and you go, okay, this track is somehow dead. Horses on the lead are getting tired. It's not a dead rail. It's a dead track overall. Because you get a dead track overall, you end up having horses come and rally wide because the inside's already taken up with all the horses that are built up. So it's also an unobstructed run without dirt in the face. Also, some tracks don't have really fierce and kickback that doesn't allow horses to move through their kickback. So therefore, it looks like it's an outside bias because horses that are in the clear are not getting the dirt in their face and they're actually moving freer and easier. So little things like that I feel, are track profiles are being misunderstood as biases. I hear it every year at Saratoga. I get sick of hearing it. Oh, this horse won on a golden rail. And then you know what happened? That horse wins again. You know, so why? Is it a golden rail again? No, it's not. Also, when people talk about horses winning wire to wire and the inside is good, they fail to look at the head-on. They fail to understand the kind of trip the horse had. You go to New York and you hit the replay button for the head-ons, and those horses are 4 to 5 off the rail. You do a lot of replay work. How many times have you looked at the head-on and you see these horses 5 off the inside going into the far turn? They're not on the rail, so how can it be a golden rail? And also, speed horses gravitate down towards the inside as they turn for home. Very few, you know, front runners you see stay in the 4 or 5 path. A lot of them kind of gradually come down towards the rail. Why is that? Because the horses are taught that when you're on the rail, you're supposed to run. When you're off the rail, you're supposed to relax. So a lot of riders will keep a horse off the rail, off 3, 4 wide down the backside, even though he's inside of other horses, to not get him on that rail and telling him basically, let's go. So that's the one item that I find that a lot of handicappers can be very hypocritical because they want to call it, you know, they want to call it that it's an inside bias, but it's not inside because the horse was 4 wide down the backside.
Yeah, as I was saying earlier, there are different aspects that go into whether it's inside, you know, it's outside, middle of the track is best. What has worked for me in the past, and I'm not, you know, saying that this is definitive, but I've always tend to look deeper into it when weather has taken place, you know, whether it's rain, whether it's extreme cold, you know, as I face handicapping Oaklawn, which is one of my favorite tracks to handicap in the winter, Oaklawn with their freezing temperatures, it definitely tilts the track. You know, when they can't control the, you know, the moisture that's in there, the freezing tracks, like you mentioned, aqueduct in the winter is the same. They used to have, you know, they used to have the inner track. They don't have that anymore. But it definitely, like I said, when water gets involved one way or the other, you know, the track maintenance, if it's too much, if it's too little, you mentioned kickback, you know, those are different factors. If the track is too loose, you know, a lot of those things, but it goes back to maintenance and it goes back to me first and foremost is weather and how much moisture is in that track.
Santa Anita was a great facility, campus for me to understand a lot of this. I remember sitting with Steve Wood, and one day he took me on the backside, and it was cold. It was in the 30s. And Santa Anita, when it gets cold in the 30s in the morning, there's two different type of tracks. The sun is shining on the backside. So that temperature was about 5 to 6, 7 degrees warmer than it was on the front side. If you use the thermometer on the front side, it would be almost 5 to 10 degrees colder. The ground would be. So it held more moisture in the stretch and it would dry out a lot easier on the backside. So on the backside, it would be very loose and brittle. Speed horses just to basically run away from them. And then they'd hit the stretch and the track would slow down. And people would say, well, then closers should have won. No. When you have a track that's looser and tiring, it's tiring for everybody. So how many times, remember, you see the horses hit the eighth ball and there would not be a change of order of finish. They'd be in the same order they were at the eighth ball. Or the same order they were at the quarter pole. That's because that track was so deep and tiring because of the moisture in it that it didn't allow horses to be able to grab a hold of it and finish. So when you talk to handicappers, they don't have a lot of sense when it comes down when you tell them that track is going to be dead in the stretch. Oh, the closers are going to fly by. How's the closer going to come flying by when that's going to do their best running over the worst part of the over the worst track? The speed. Nobody's going to pass anybody. And a lot of the times you get that, and a lot of handicappers don't get it. Also, you hear a track man say, the main track today was slow, is a little deeper and slower. I take that, it is looser and brittle. Speed will dominate. People say, well, you're saying it's slow. Speed will dominate because speed can skip across it, get on the lead. Everybody's struggling to the wire and nobody can go by anybody. You know when that happens? In race one and two, like for example, on a hot day when they don't put enough tracks on it, water on it. Look at Gulfstream when you get that track becomes like a beach. When it becomes like a beach, it's also speed just goes wire to wire. Nobody passes anybody. But if they have enough water in it, then the track seems to be fair. To me, tracks are completely dependent. Water, less water, speed dominates. More water, more fairer track. So sometimes people don't see that, and all they just right away claim bias. That is my argument, alas.
And you know what, Bruno, you and I have gone through this the past few years. I mean, obviously we've going to one of our favorite tracks is Del Mar, and we go through this every summer with Del Mar, which is. This is a big point that you and I discuss every summer when we dig into these tracks and the summer tracks at Del Mar, how it changes. And I know one of your favorite angles, which you can elaborate on this, is the tide. And, you know, the tide comes in, being that the people that are not familiar or haven't been to Del Mar, it's literally right on the beach. It is right there, so the moisture comes in. And the high and low tide, Bruno loves to, one of his favorite angles is to get the tide reports in the morning and put that into play in the afternoon. If you want to touch more on that, Bruno, but that is
there's a couple of instances where that becomes very, very strong. And I'll go back to November of 2017, the first Del Mar Breeders' Cup, where all of a sudden, the first 2 days, it was an extremely high tide, a low tide during the afternoon. I mean, extreme. Where it was like 3 feet under during the races, and everything was winning wire to wire. I remember a friend of mine came over to dinner, and he was, you know, next door to us at Maurizio's Trattoria in Encinitas, and he said, oh, speed is going to be so good this weekend. This track's like a conveyor belt. And I'm laughing at him in a way, my inside of me going, this guy has no clue. He had no exposure to Del Mar. He had no clue. And I knew that the next day it was completely flipping. At 10 a.m. when they ran the first race, the tide was 9 feet over. So it's not about the tide. It's about the moisture that gets into the track. So that moisture that gets into the track creates a different track that you saw yesterday. But you've got to have a huge difference in the way the tides swing. If you've got a 2 foot difference between high and low tide, it isn't going to do anything. But if you've got a 7 to 8 foot difference, I can go back to one other example. Back when I was timing the races for Del Mar Thoroughbred Club in 2005, I remember I befriended the engineers at Del Mar. And they were telling me a story about when they built that infield pavilion. And if you've been in that infield pavilion, you notice how uneven the ground is. It goes up and down. There's valleys in that cement, you know. And it's funny. I see the same thing here in New Orleans in the streets, because the water is right up underneath that. So what happened was they were trying to lay cement, and they would dig enough down that water started coming up. So they had to wait till they got the lowest tide that week, lay the cement, and hope it dries on time before the water came up. But if you go to Del Mar and you go to the infield pavilion, you'll notice yourself the wait. So that's how close that water is up on that base of that track. What it does, it adds moisture. Moisture changes the actual track overall. Water is the absolute lifeline for a racetrack for it to be fair. Not enough water, it is not fair. It'll probably tilt to speed. So that's the one thing. How about at Saratoga a couple of years when you had horses like the one thing that the horse that Jorge Navarro had that went like 107 and change. And then you had that Imperial Rocket, Little Rock or something like that. You remember him?
Imperial Hint
went like 14 and change. Those two tracks were unbelievably, they were wet, but it was almost like, and they skipped right over it. And so water can make a track either be fair or completely biased. So to me, it's about water content more than anything else. And same thing here in New Orleans. You know, we get a lot of water in the track, you know, and we and you know, New Orleans is six feet under sea level. So there is a lot of moisture there. And that track, and you put a lot of moisture in that track will be a different animal. So, Brian, sell us on a bias. Give us your final thoughts on a bias on their first edition of Handicapper Short Shorts, the biased racing surface.
Yeah, as I touched on, for me, at least, I always tend to do like weather to me is what, like you're saying, moisture. But weather to me is what affects track the most and creates these biases, whether it's inside, outside, whatever lane it is. You know, again, that's what I tend to focus in on more, and at least give yourself a good sample size. I try not to jump the gun. If you see a couple of races that are in and you see, you know, horses rallying wide or horses going to the lead, get enough of a sample size and then try to do the work. It is labor intensive. For me, it's not the end all be all. And when it comes to my handicapping, but it definitely is a factor. Go over a card, you know, see what happened in that card, see how the pace is, you know, shook out, where do they come from? And if you can see a continuous pattern at 1 or 2 days or something, I would go back and up or downgrade horses that won from that or horses that, you know, didn't run well or ran really well. That's the way that I encompass bias into my daily handicapping.
And I'm going to leave you with this thought. Number one was wire to wire. Horse 2 and 3, chase or right up there, right up inside or outside of horse number one. They finish next to last or last. Horse come clongering up for second. People say speed bias. So did they mean to tell me that the speed was, there was a bias for the number one horse that won, but there wasn't a bias for the other two? This is where I call the bullshit. Now, if they go 1, 2, 3 all the way across the track and they finish 1, 2, 3, and it's like that for a number of races, Maybe. But if you got one horse winning and two other horses backing up and finishing nowhere or fading, how can you say there's a bias because only one horse was affected, not the other three? I rest my case, counselor.
Get more from Bruno by going to racingwithbruno.com.